Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started.
Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. I've been sitting on this episode for the better part of a year now, and today's the day. So without a lot of buildup or hype, I'm just going to give it to you straight, no chaser. It's a little jarring at the beginning, but just hang in there. It's a really good episode. So back in August of 2025, I discovered a sizable lump on the left side of my neck. Yep. My wife was away on retreat, and I proceeded to get it tested. And in October, I was officially diagnosed with stage 3 non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Now, as fate would have it, I've spent most of my adult life immersed in alternative health and natural medicine. I was a practitioner of structural body work in New York City for a decade, and as such, I was exposed to lots of effective natural ways of treating the mind, body, and spirit. And it's become part of my value system, and that is evident by the fact that I take no pharmaceutical drugs for anything. I've also gathered different ways to treat cancer in an alternative way with no chemotherapy. So even before I got diagnosed, I was already aware of effective anti-cancer treatments and diets, things like Thomas Seyfried's starve your cancer of glucose approach. And I was also aware of things like fenbendazole and ivermectin and chlorine dioxide, all things that are considered good anti-cancer and good anti-parasite treatments. Now, I also went to a traditional oncologist, of course, and he was advising a more traditional chemoimmunotherapy approach. Rough stuff, but effective on cancer. Initially, I resisted this approach. I told him to hold a spot for me, but I wanted to try a natural approach for 6 months to see if it would work. And he warned me that my cancer was stage 3 or 3 plus, and if I let it go to stage 4 where it metastasizes into other systems, our treatment would need to go away from gentle effective and one into a more aggressive form of treatment. I told him I understood the stakes. What follows today is an interview with my lovely wife, Lisa, who rode shotgun on this and has a perspective on things that will hopefully help you if you or a loved one gets this sort of curveball thrown at you. Hopefully you will gain something valuable from seeing how the Rizaks handled a health crisis and what that process was like. Thank you for your support, Base Campers, and for your prayers. Let's get a word from our sponsor, and then let's go talk to Lisa. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Lisa Rizak. Lisa is a mother, a fundraising auctioneer, and the current Republican candidate for Washington State House of Representatives in Legislative District 32. She's also my wife and life partner for the past 3 decades. Here is my interview with Lisa Rizak. Okay, I am here with Lisa Rizak, fundraising auctioneer, LD candidate, my wife and life partner for 3 decades, and repeated guest here on the show. Lisa, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you.
Good morning.
Yeah. You know, you're the most, you've had the most appearances, and not just because you live in the house. You do really good episodes, but also...
Hey, Lisa, you want to do an episode today?
Also, in a pinch, you are money. So, you know, I wouldn't ask you on so many times if you didn't
deliver.
If you didn't deliver, exactly. Thank you. You're like a pinch hitter. I put you in and you get a base hit or a double or a home run. And I'm like, there we go again.
But considering that, you really haven't had me on too many times. I think it's only like 3, 4, or 5, something like that.
It's like 5.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. The most. Yeah. My listeners know now by the intro what this episode's about. And, you know, it's been a long time coming. I was kind of waiting. When should I do that episode? I didn't want to do it. I didn't tell a lot of people for the longest time. So I didn't want to announce it on Basecamp and, you know, have my dad hear it on a radio show. So, so just winding back, you know, you and I were both in retreat with Patrick. Mm-hmm. That's our meditation and spiritual teacher that we both study with. You very intensively, and I'm also in there. But we were in a retreat. You were in an in-person retreat in California, and I was doing the same retreat
online. And during that retreat, early on that retreat, I discovered that there was a lump on my neck, and it was not small. It was like, whoa. And I'll tell a little bit more about the backstory of that. I immediately, while you were in California, started going to the doctor and fast tracking everything because interesting enough, I had been to the doctor for three mm-hmm. straight checkups and said, I got something going on with my neck to my general practitioner. Mm-hmm. And they never diagnosed anything. Like, no, we did a scan. No, you don't have anything. And then the last time I could have swore there was a small lump, but he said, oh, it's a lymph node, like a inflamed lymph node. Let me get you an antibiotic. And so by the time the retreat came around, it wasn't a golf ball size lump, but it was not that much smaller. And I was like, oh my God, what mm-hmm. in the hell? So then I went and I was like, no inflamed lymph nodes, get this under a scan. And they were like, and I could tell that they were also like, whoa, uh-oh. And so I got that and the PET scan, they did everything, the biopsy and stuff. So by the time you got home—
Which I can't believe you had that. You got that all done so fast.
Oh, I was like, I'm in action.
Yeah.
So by the time you got home, I was like, I got something to tell you.
Yeah.
And I got stage 3, you know, mantle cell lymphoma. And so that came out of the blue. I wasn't telling you I got a lump, I'm getting checked out. I don't think I mentioned yeah. anything mm-hmm. because if it was benign or whatever, I'm like, oh, they found something and no big deal. They're going to remove it or they're going to treat it or whatever. But it wasn't that. It was what, you know, kind of a worst case. And so how was that for you when I first told you? How shocking? And then what did you immediately think about that?
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, completely out of left field. Although I do remember you complaining about your neck for quite a while or, you yeah. know, throughout the like kind of years. It seemed like it'd been like maybe a year and a half. You'd been like, you know, I just feel like there's something weird with my neck. But it was completely out of left field, you know, and I thought you were acting a little odd. Also, when you mentioned that you had mentioned this to doctors throughout, I can't believe how many times I've heard people say that they knew there was something wrong and they had to demand from the doctor that they take a second or a third look at this. It happened with my friend Star. And it's like, I think sometimes it's like the destiny and it's shielded from the doctors or something. I don't know. It's like, it's, mm-hmm. you know, so I know that Star dealt with that and then she ended up, by the time they like diagnosed it, it was way too far gone. And then same with our friend, your friend, Sean Delmore, who became mm-hmm. my friend, same thing. He was like, he goes, I knew there was something wrong. And he goes, and they wouldn't, like, they put him out like 5 or 6 weeks. And he goes, I'm going to stand with a sandwich board on the street.
You get me in. Yeah.
You get me in, you know, and then that went worst case scenario. He had one of the worst ones, but I mean that is not the first time where the doctors are just like, nope, it's fine. But the person is like, they just know there's something wrong. And so there's that yeah. weird disconnect first, you know? And so I just think that in that moment that you were in retreat and that was, you know, God going, you know, tap, 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 Tony, it's time, you know, because it yeah. was time for you to like, you know, be aware of this and you knew in the back of your mind. But yeah, so it's just really out of left field. You were acting like kind of wound up, kind of odd. And mm-hmm. you're like, I have something to tell you. And I was like, are you leaving me? Are you? I was like, do you have a girlfriend? Or
Yeah.
I was like, what is he doing? You know? And then you're like, you know, I have this lump and then you told me that you already went in and they, you know, they're fast tracking you. And I was like, wow. So it kind of felt a little reassuring that you were handling it. Like you're like, I'm on it. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you didn't go into some sort of like, I don't know what to do. You know, you were on it. So that left me with like immediately just there to, you know, support you and be an observer in this because there was really, you know, it's your diagnosis. So I became all of a sudden, you know, it's easy for me. I get to just sit there and like, I can give you guidance all day long, but you're yeah. the one in the hot seat, you know?
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's like you were clearly moving forward with it. And I just had to, you know, kind of get caught up. But I would say then the next difficult part was, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later when you got the diagnosis, because initially you didn't know what it was. And so that was a weird moment. We had just closed on the house in Chelan. I was in Chelan and it was on the phone and you were telling me it was, you know, stage three and this and that. And even at the very beginning, I remember I wanted to be very careful about how we language it, you know, not, you know, we can probably talk more about that. Maybe not in this moment, but I even remember very initially, like not wanting to give it more power than it should, have and to treat it that way. But that was the moment I was upset. I remember, you know, being on the phone with you and I was upset and I called my bestie and, she was upset. She was like, you know, her reaction was, you know, extreme, kind of like, F that, you know, and I'm like, well, okay, wait a second. You know, we don't want to F this.
Yeah.
And I remember being upset kind of initially, but then I don't remember. I think there was maybe another point along the way where maybe I cried one night when I was stressed out. But other than that, I haven't felt very scared or stressed out about it.
I tried to set the tone for my loved ones, basically, by how I was handling it and talking about it, you know, and that's really important. It's like, it's really, you're leading it. And so if you're going to lead with a lot of fear, other people will follow, you know. And then I was blessed. I was in alternative health for a long, long time. I was a Rolfer structural integration practitioner in New York for a decade, which put me in the circles of all sorts of talented and intuitive and wise naturopathic doctors, colonic hydrotherapists, you name the modality. And I know people that work in that field and are talented. So I gathered, maybe because I had cancer in the family tree on both my grandmothers died of cancer. One quite young, my paternal grandmother was young when she died. So over the years, I gathered information on how people in the alternative and natural health communities handled that diagnosis. And so it was almost like I just got these files out and all these different things that were out on my phone. And I just started looking everything over. And it was really important to me at the beginning to handle it. I wanted to handle it in a naturopathic way. I do not take pharmaceuticals if I don't have to. I don't take them, period. Uh-huh. So it wasn't easy. I had a foot getting advice in the naturopathic world, and I had a foot in the allopathic oncology world. And then also I got also advice from a naturopathic oncologist that straddles both. So I was kind of triangulating the information, but in my heart, I really wanted to do it without chemotherapy if I could. And I realized, you know, the allopathic oncologist, who's a wonderful doctor, by the way, you know, he said, you're stage three and this thing's pretty aggressive. Like, I don't want you to go to stage four, which means it gets inside and into other organs, because then we can't treat it as gently as we are able to the way it is. So he goes, you can try it doing it the natural way, but I would put it on a short leash. And I says, okay. And I was blessed to kind of have, to be an athlete and have a good body awareness, you know, the same body awareness that could sense the thing in my neck 2 years prior before they said, oh yeah, you got something going on. Uh-huh. So I was like, I'm going to take this approach, which was, I don't want to get too much into the approach, but it was kind of to shorten the story. It was a kind of a starve the cancer of glucose, which cancer cells love sugar and glucose. I myself love sugar and glucose. So I took this approach to kind of starve it. It had a little bit of anti-parasite medication like fenbendazole and ivermectin. And I was also introducing chlorine dioxide, which is very, very cleansing to the system, but can be a little bit, you know, hard in a way. And so I did that. And so I did that for 6 months.
And tons of fasting.
Oh my
and
God.
And tons of diet change.
3 to 5 days at a time.
Yeah, with only water.
Yeah. And I was,
and
I
then,
was
and
really
then the diet.
Yeah. So
shifting your diet around, you went all keto, like kind of meat and vegetables. And then you noticed that it had, like, it was almost like the lumps had grown. And then you were like, oh, I should go, you know, vegetarian. Yeah. So then you tried that. And that was not you, that, but it was kind of getting a little bit further along at that point. And that didn't, it was, I don't know, why did you stop doing that so soon? It just didn't seem like it was going in the right direction.
Well, because I could see and feel that the lumps were getting bigger in my neck.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it got big, right? Oh. It was like, uh-oh. And I could also feel, the reason I went back over to the chemoimmunotherapy and the allopathic approach was I could also feel in my armpits, which is where lymphoma shows up too. I could feel, those were smaller lumps, but I could feel them starting to nudge into my rib cage. And I was like, I do not want this going into lungs, you know, and liver, anything inside there. And so there, I arrived at a point where I'm like, Lisa, it's, my approach isn't working.
Yeah.
And I gave it 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was like, and then it was with a sense of urgency that I made appointments back at Virginia Mason for the chemoimmunotherapy. But so how was that? Like, how was that for you to watch me take an approach that I really believed in? And I wanted to be somebody that shrunk it without chemo, right? That would have been an awesome story for me, but that's not what God wanted for me. And you watched me kind of walk it, and was there fear that I wasn't gonna go over and do the chemo? Like, how was that for you to watch me go, I'm gonna do it this way?
Yeah.
And then go all the way. Yeah.
A couple times I was concerned, and I wanted you to just keep it as a consideration. You know, and you forgot about the first doctor that you went to, who, when we got there, I mean, I don't know how many conversations you'd had with her prior to me.
That was the only one. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I just thought it was super weird. She had like very little like kind of patient, you know, way of relating with us. She didn't say hi, you know, so this is the diagnosis. She didn't start like on step one. She jumped into like step four, which is like, I don't even want to say it, but she was like, if you don't treat this at all, then I give you 37 months. And it was just like, whoa. And at that point you had already been doing your research. And you were already like, I'm not going to not treat it at all. You know, at that point, you were already doing your fasting, benbendazole, ivermectin, chlorine dioxide. You had been doing the research on the symptoms, the adverse, the side effects from doing chemotherapy. I mean, I talked with a guy who has prostate and cancer, and he talked about his friend who, you know, maybe a decade ago, you know, it's like, hit it hard. And then unfortunately, I think there was maybe a group of people that hit it hard, and then they died from another type of cancer that came about because of the chemotherapy. You know, they basically died from the chemotherapy. And so
people can, Well, and I want to capture something there before. So, and just the first doctor too, for my listeners, she said, so we do it with a targeted drug approach. We give you 4 or 5 drugs for this. And then she said a lot of things, but she said, we give you 4 or 5 drugs.
Yeah.
There will likely be side effects, but we treat those with 2 or 3 drugs that
more drugs
will help with that. And I go, yeah, and those 2 or 3 drugs have side effects. And she goes, they can. And then she goes, and then you just take 1 or 2 for the rest of your life. And I just looked at her, I go, that sounds like a recipe for really poor health for me. I go, I've been in alternative health. I've been a healthy individual my whole life. I've stayed away from these drugs because they have so many bad effects. And you're telling me I've got to take all these drugs that have side effects. You're going to treat it. I go, that just sounds terrible. I go, I'd rather just deal with the cancer than deal with all that.
And at one point we were like, well, so, and then how long do we take that one? And she goes, like, in perpetuity. And I was like, what? You know, it's like, so you're telling me I have to deal with this for the rest of my life, you know, and you're going to have me, you're just going to manage it. And it's just like, and that isn't where I come from. It's like, you know, how we approach things. It's like, no, this can be healed. That doesn't mean we want to be on your drug for in perpetuity. And it's like, what about any assessment of it? She didn't talk about any of that. And so I think she was the good first doctor because she showed us what we don't want, you know? And so she was just weird. And I mean, you walked out and you were like, dude, she's like totally closing on the deal. I go at the end, you go at the end. She was just like, so are you in or are you out? You know, I go, she even did the close, you know? So
Dr. A goes, what did you think of her? What do you think of that approach? I go, that is a hard pass. There is no way I'm doing that. So what else you got? Yeah.
It was really good to see what we didn't want right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you asked me, did I support you? And so, yeah, absolutely. I was walking along with you on this the entire way. You know, and what it reminded me of was that at one point, so I have a lot of cysts in my breast. I always have since my, you know, 30s. And so a couple years ago, I found a more significant lump. And I was like, I'm sure it's a cyst, it's going to be fine. But I remember going in, and what I was concerned about, my greatest fear was that not having breast, you know, this is the language thing. I like try not to even say these words, right? You know, we call it rogue cells.
Yeah.
You know, I was afraid of having breast rogue cells. Yeah. But was because I didn't want to be put into the medical industrial complex. And that's exactly, you know, what she was saying with this in perpetuity. And I just saw something the other day, and it showed like a breakdown of 1 through 20 of the main things that people suffer from these days, from cancer to heart disease, you know, down the list, and the amount of billions and billions of dollars that each one of those that the medical industrial complex, you know, it makes money from. And so this, you know, I mean, you see the commercials for, you know, live longer. And it's like, so that you can, and I'm not trying to be so negative because, but so I was going to, you know, to like live longer, it's like, so we can basically make money off of you.
Yeah.
We don't want you to die right away. And then I just interrupted myself saying that I don't want to be so negative because, you know, this is so individual. And that's one of the things I've seen is that, you know, we've along the way, we've heard stories and people been like, you know, I know this guy, he just breathed fresh air, ate fruit and prayed to God. And he was, you know, healed of stage 4. And it's like, you know, and then we know people that it's like they were, you know, dead in like 6 months.
I know.
So, you know, it is so individual. And so I just have so much respect for everybody's journey on this and yours. And it's like, I can sit here as the observer and give all sorts of advice, which I wouldn't do because how insensitive is that? But, you know, you're doing the best you can. And just like we can see people's edges in all sorts of things that they do, this is the same thing. I could see, you know, I can see maybe an edge that you're not seeing, but I just hold the space for you to see that because, you know, this is a learning once again. And so what are we here to learn from this? And so to answer your question, I totally supported you and completely understood why you didn't want to just dive in and do it, you know, in the way that the first doctor was recommending.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've been such a great support through all this. You've given me space, which I needed. And also you just supported me in checking in with me and making me really good food when I feel a little wiped out. You know, one thing I have said right from the beginning, really, was that the diagnosis has been a great teacher. And I wanted to ask, I'm going to share a little bit about what I've learned, and then ask you, you know, what you've learned from it, because for me, it was a natural place for me to land, what are the rogue cells in my neck and my lymph system trying to teach me? And, you know, as somebody that's been an addict, you know, drinking, sugar addiction since I was little, you know, it had me look at some of my lifelong habits. And you know, when you get a diagnosis like this, to be honest, it's about 25 factors. You know, it's not one thing. My grandmother's having it, was that a factor? Yes, but it's not the only thing. My sugar addiction of my whole life, basically. Yeah, that's probably a contributing factor. But then there's like, you know, the 5G radiation. I'm covering up my phone a lot, turning it off. There's environmental factors. We look out in the skies, they're spraying stuff on us constantly in Seattle and everywhere in the world, really. And so there's a lot of things that can make people get this kind of diagnosis. So I didn't want to make myself wrong. I didn't want to, you know, say I caused it or my grandmother's caused it or anything like that. And for me, probably one of the biggest transformations was realizing, because one of the fears I had was like, I'm going to do the chemotherapy and it's going to wreck me. And I even said that. Don't language things that way, you know? And I knew deep in my mind, I had a belief that chemo will do all sorts of bad shit. It will kill the cancer. It will reduce the cancer, and it's going to reduce function and life expectancy and all that, because it's such a strong drug, right?
Yeah.
And I worked with our friend Belina, who's a spiritual teacher and is a kind of a master at getting you to tease out you knew it too. You could hear my context. And when I realized, you know, because I did the alternative approach for a good 6 months, as I realized at month four, month five, I'm like, it's not working. And I had some come Jesus moments. I was seeing Belina and trying to get my mind right around what was about to happen. And I just remember one last night, I was over in Chelan, and I think I felt nauseous. I felt like I just felt so sick to my stomach thinking about doing conventional chemo immunotherapy. Mm. I was just like, oh my God, I'm not ready. It's going to be terrible, you know. But with some sessions with her, she reoriented me into seeing that, look, it doesn't have to be that way for you. People don't prepare sometimes in the right way. This is a complex issue, and you have to get yourself aligned with God and realize that this is the, you know. And she had asked me a lot of questions. What do you think God wants you to do here? And I said, I think God wants me to go to chemo immunotherapy because my approaches mm-hmm. aren't working, and God doesn't want me to die so mm-hmm. soon. He wants to extend my life, so I'm here longer. So
wasn't that funny?
Yeah.
Just that was one of the things I remember that now was, you know, Tony's got to do it his way. I remember going, you know, is he going to die doing it his way? And you learned your way through that, you know, because you are stubborn. We're all stubborn, but you were just, you know, it's like Tony's way or the highway. And I was like, oh crap, is that what he's going to do here? But you know, you totally learned that and softened on it. And that's like kind of dissolved. I don't feel that energy like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, and then I also learned that prayer is really powerful. Like I had so many people praying for me. You know, people would say, hey, you got mentioned at the pulpit at church tonight. I had a lot of people praying and still praying for me. And I feel that. And that is super humbling for somebody that's kind of got a strong warrior, self-sufficient, you know, kind of, well, you know, way of orienting, to surrender over to God, to surrender to Christ, to surrender to people wanting to help me in a very deep spiritual way was incredibly humbling, and has allowed me to kind of travel this with acceptance and grace, because the highest source has been appealed to on my behalf, both from myself and you, but also from a wide group of people all over the place. And it's just really, it was really touching. It's been really touching. And that was kind of something a little bit new for me too, that I learned.
Yeah. Well, you said something a minute ago mm-hmm. about, let's see, you were talking about, that you were, I mean, fearful. You really didn't want to go into the allopathic. And first, I do want to say that we're incredibly grateful that is something that we can do these days, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because otherwise, I don't know how it would have gone for you, because what some people know is that by the time you got treated, your neck was as big as your head.
Yeah.
And I mean, as wide on the sides. I mean, it was really bad, and you couldn't move your neck and stuff like that. So these lumps, they grew. And so, you know, and then also, you know, but here's the thing. You got your blood work done at the beginning. You, for 6 months, did that approach. You said you went in and you were ready to go into Dr. A, and you're ready to go get the chemotherapy. And he was like, I don't know what you're doing, but your blood work is amazing. Your organs are excellent. Like, you are in, like, yeah. It's ironic. You are in amazing health, but the lumps have grown. So we're going to go after the lumps now, you know?
Yeah.
You now, in a perfect world, you would think that would have gone after those cells as well. It didn't. I don't know why. That's a, you know, that's God's thing. But that your health had really improved, and you were in, and so it wasn't all for naught. And you're like, and you said that at one point, like, this didn't do anything. I'm like, quit saying that. Look at, you know, you are in great health. And now you've even said along the way, the doctor said, sometimes I have to back people off, but your markers are excellent. You know, your body is taking this so well. And so that's the difference. So it's like, you got to look in how it made the difference. But you mentioned, you know, being afraid, not wanting to get the treatment. And it's like, you know, how we language things and how we approach things and how we think about things can dictate how it occurs for us. You know, if I think somebody's bullying me, well, I'm going to attract those bullies. You know, it's an energetic, what do they say? The roller skate with the roller skate key. It's a perfect little match, you know? Yeah. And so I was really grateful that you did that work to be just like, no, this is good. My body is healing. My body is healed. My body, you know, you're saying those things. So, you know, you're taking a lot in and processing a lot, and it was bumpy at times, but you kept on, you know, doing that. And we've talked about this a lot, but you know, how we perceive things and how they affect us is the story of the dirty water guru. And our teacher, Patrick, he talked about how somebody said to him once, you know, I said, Patrick, you know, you mentioned the vaccines, and that he goes, the guy asked Patrick a question, and Patrick said, well, I think you should get it. And he goes, what did you, he goes, but Patrick said, but I don't need to. And he said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, for you, you believe that it works and it's a good thing. So that's why you should get it, you know, but for me, I don't need it. And so he talked about the dirty water guru is how the name translates, but he literally would like drink from, this is so gross, like raw sewage. And he was healthy and fine. And like, because he's like, it's healthy for me. My body is pure. And so, you know, it's like and who knows, this is, maybe it's a myth or whatever, but the idea is that your mind is very powerful in how, what you say to it. And so that was something that you got through. And I was really, really grateful for that.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing I wanted to mention and just talk about briefly was that there's this question of who do you tell? If you get this diagnosis, you start to go, okay, I have circles, I have inner circle people, I have not too far on, you know, I have inner circle people that I didn't tell, right? So, and then there's people that bust it out on Facebook as soon as they get diagnosed. And so everybody knows and everybody said, I'm a private person. And in particular, because of the way that I approached that first 6 months, I did not jump into chemo, even though I was stage three, which I did not want to get people reaching out and saying, are you sure? I didn't need that. I knew there would be a fearful reaction for some people, naturally. So at the beginning, I told you and Lucas, and then I had my inner team that was helping me with my treatment. So that was Janelle and Dr. D. So a very tight, did I tell anybody else? I don't think I did.
I told some people. Oh,
and then you told some people.
Yeah.
But I did not tell my parents or my brother. There was inner circle friends who I consider, I love, that I didn't tell either. And so that's why I didn't do a podcast about this for a long time, because was like, I'm not going to have my dad hear it on, you know? And so I waited. But when I made the shift from the naturopathic approach and I was starting to go into chemo, that became a time when I could start telling people, because all of a sudden, you know, my calendar was going to look different and how I was feeling was going to be different, you know, depending on the day of the treatment and all that. So then I told my parents and my brother and a few more friends, not a lot of people, but then we let our community know in politics and all that stuff. So more and more people found out. I don't, you know, it's fine now. I still don't post it. I don't do social media, so I don't post it out there for people to, you know, say all kinds of comments. I didn't want the attention at the beginning in particular. I still don't. I'm okay with people knowing, obviously, I'm doing this and this is listened to all over the place. But I guess I just wanted you to comment on, you know, because I think you were like, you got to tell, you were the one that were was urging me at each point, like, should we tell this person? Should we tell that couple? You know, and I was like, no, not yet. Yep, and then, and then, you know, I told my parents and my brother, you know, all at the same time, basically. I actually flew to Hawaii to tell my mom in person because I thought that was more important. That was more appropriate than on the phone. And so, yeah, how was that? And did you see the reasoning or the behind it or why I did it that way?
Absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, knowing you, that's the exact right approach, you know? And the thing is that it can become, you know, it's like, it becomes your badge, you know, and it's like, what we have to watch out for is becoming victims. You know, I mean, just look at what's happening in society right now. We're victimized by everything. And I think that that's one of the things that we really have to heal as the species, as humanity, is this victim mentality that, you know, we are all free. And so when you tell a lot of people, there becomes that, oh no, you know, the hospital voice, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And it's like, we're going to be fine. You know, he's fine. He's not, you know, this is going to be good. And so
Or on the flip side too, where they're like, fuck cancer. It's like, no, it's not that energy either. Like, I'm not fighting it.
It's a part of your body. Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of me. I want to bless it as I heal it, you know?
Yeah, and by keeping it to ourselves, we got to really deal with it in the way that we wanted to deal with it without that outside, you know, interference of like, oh no, or anger. It's just like, we just got to be with it. And like we said, you know, it's like, there's no F cancer in our house. We, you know, it's rogue cells, like we said. How do we get them back into the light? And what do they need? And, you know, it's a part of your body. And so it was hard for me because I couldn't then really get support much out of it. But I was like, well, what support do I need? You know, I mean, I'm like, it's fine. He's going to be fine. And so I think that, you know, also, you know, this is a lesson in what is in my control and what is not. And that has always been one of my big teachers is just that, you know, what do I have control over? And I'm 100% certain I have no control over the cancer in your experience. Right. Yeah. And so I just knew my place, and it doesn't matter how much of course, did I guide you? Did I use my intuition? Did I give you suggestions? Absolutely. Along the way. But you know, it's just that, but ultimately, how this goes is really not up to either of us. If it's your time, we can do everything right. Then it's, you know, that. And I remember, so there was a sense of peace with that because it's so much out of my control. And this actually went back to one of your episodes that I remember listening to a couple months prior to this happening. And it was, I think it was episode 314 with Jeremy Stalnecker. Mm-hmm. I remember him talking about he called it the sovereignty of God. And I had never heard it expressed so eloquently and captured in a way where I could understand, you know, the whole idea of why good things happen, why bad things happen to good people. And I was not, I couldn't have peace with God for a long time in my life because of that, because I thought it was like this punitive, you know, God we've done something wrong and he's punishing us. Mm-hmm. And now, but then as I've gotten older, and then the way he expressed the sovereignty of God is that it's up to God. It's God's hands, and it's out of my control. And there's like a peace with it. And it's not, I used to think of it as punitive, but now it's like, no, it's just part of like the great mysteries of life and in the, you know, the cycle of birth and death. And so with that, I just had, you know, people die immediately in car accidents, God, you know, knock on wood. And so I was like, this could go either way. And it has, and all my hand wringing, all my worrying, any crying will have no impact on this whatsoever. So I was like, this is a saying I used to say is, if you're going to tell a story, you might as well make up a good one, one that's positive, one that's inspiring. And so it's like, well, we're going to listen, we're going to support, and we're just going to, you know that this is going to turn out well. And if it goes a different direction, I'll deal with that when it does. But it really was so much out of my hands that I really didn't know how to approach it any other way than that. But it was a little weird not being able to tell people along the way, you know, you quit work, you lost a bunch of weight at one time. And it would have been nice to tell people. But in the same sense, I think it's a good lesson for me, Lisa, to not be blathering on about my life. And that's a really good lesson for me to be like, you deal with this over here instead of running out there, you know, maybe looking for that support or, you know, so it was a good energetic place for me to be as well.
Yeah. And to share a story, my lovely mom, you know, I went over there to tell her. Her house guests were out of town for a few weeks. So I went over there for 10 days and spent time with her. I knew I was going to tell her when I went. And I told her. Initially she took it really well, right? She's like, okay. And then, I called my brother right after my mom went in the house. I called my brother. He was also kind of, you know, thunderstruck, like, whoa, blah, blah. You know, I spent 20 minutes on the phone with him. Yeah. I come back in and my mom's crying at the dining room table, you know, and I'm like, Mom, what's going on? She goes, it says here on the internet that you have a 50-50 chance of living only 5 more years. I'm like, Mom, don't go there onto the internet looking for reassurance. I said, look, the flip side of that is I've got a 50-50 chance of living more than 5 years. And I said, I'm probably going to be one of those. And I go, look, and Mom, even if I didn't have this diagnosis, I might not live 5 years. Like, God has got your timeline. I don't know if I'm living. And she goes, oh, she looks so relieved. She's like, okay. I'm overreacting. I'm like, just anything that scares you, just call me and I'll tell you. She goes, I'm going to let you lead. I'm like, please let me lead this. I will tell you what's what. And so, but it's also been really important. Like, I've checked in with my mom and dad, and my brother's been checking in with me about the treatment, how it's going. So my mom's like, oh, it's so good to hear your voice. I can hear the energy and I can hear that you're not diminished. And it just reassures me that you're okay. And I'm like, I am okay. I'm doing very well. Everything's good. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you have to be prepared to lead the dance for your loved ones, because not all of them are going to be in that camp of like, you know, this is a learning experience and this is a healing journey. And, you know, and so I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you too is you and I think it's one of the reasons, I know it's one of the reasons that we've been together for so long, is we have this thing in common where we really value self-growth, you know, from all the way back from when we first were married. We did couples therapy. We did Landmark. I did the Mankind Project. We've done Patrick trainings. Awareness work, growth is really important to us. And there's a lot of listeners that have done, you know, Joe Dispenza, or, you know, they've done their thing. Maybe it's the Church of Spiritual, you know, whatever, or it's church, you know, they have their thing that they rely on to teach them about how to navigate life's challenges, right? When you get a diagnosis like this, all of those tools are right there to support you. Like, I could see, like, just in this episode, the challenges of how I was going to language things and my own thinking about chemotherapy had to be transformed. But the tools that I've been using for years, including you and I, how we converse, and you saying, hey, you're languaging things not in a great way with that, catching me. But I guess my question is, you know, for the listeners, what would be your advice? Let's say you get a diagnosis with this, or your loved one, I guess from your perspective, it would be, what would your advice be to a loved one who maybe gets this? You know, what would you coach them on as a takeaway? I think that people are going to get a lot from this conversation, but what would be one of the things maybe that you might say, hey, you might consider this, or, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that we saw that with COVID and this, like, just fear of death, you know, and the unknown and uncertainty. And so, you know, it's like, I think that to me is kind of like the most obvious place to start, is like, what is really playing here in the background that's having us react this way? And I was so afraid of dying my whole life. And I don't know how that really shifted. Maybe my work with my retreats and stuff, but I just kept on kind of looking at it. But I would have like panic attacks as a child.
The first 15 years we were together, it was very noticeable to me that you were terrified of dying. And I did not share that same
I know fear. You didn't. And I thought that was so weird. I was talking about that in our 20s. And I was like, I'm so afraid to die. And you're like, I'm not. And I'm like, what? Afraid of death,
dude. I'm like, the soul is immortal, Lisa.
Oh, what's going on?
You've transformed that, though.
I have. So the fear of death is the other side of that is the fear of living. And so, you know, looking at how we might live a smaller life for whatever it is, you know, rejection, all those things, it's like ultimately it is a death. And so when COVID happened, I just wasn't really triggered by it. And I was able to see around the edges of it. And it doesn't mean that, I mean, it was awful. There's plenty of people that died from COVID, that died from the treatments from COVID, you know, et cetera. I'm not going to try to pretend like I, you know, understand what happens there. But I did know that I'm not going to stand 6 feet away from somebody and cover my breathing hole because of a fear I'm having. When they talked about like the statistics and we looked at like really the numbers, I was like, this is not as threatening as they say it is. My judgment was that people went into really serious reaction mode. And, you know, and I know that we all had our different levels of or our inputs that was feeding how we were reacting to things. And so, but mine was just not one of fear and that. So this is the same thing is that, you know, I think you reacted because ultimately you're not afraid of dying like that. And so you could tease through this and, you know, it's what I said earlier is that it's so completely out of my control, you know, with that. And so all of my learning has dictated my reaction to this. And I stand with that this life is about learning. That's how I approach things because I've just gotten so many challenges throughout my life, you know, and no, things have been really, really good. But the way it feels over here with my experience is that things have not really unfolded for me in the way I wanted, you know, and so the things have been great, but there's been a lot of learning there. So I've had to look at like, well, what's going on here? How can I have more peace, joy, love, and freedom? And so that's the same way that, you know, when you mentioned a growth mindset.
Yeah.
That's how I've approached this. And then I will say is that, you know, with this diagnosis, like everybody's journey is completely different. We already mentioned that, you know, some people are, you know, by not telling people, because once we even did tell people, it was kind of an interesting reaction. One was when you did finally tell people, it's like, oh yeah, we're not here for advice. We're not taking advice. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't mean we don't want your contribution. Yeah. And we want your prayer and your love. But even that, you know, so it was like, they wanted to start giving advice. Right. Yeah. And it was like, but they're like, oh, he's done with this. And so had we told people at the beginning, oh my goodness, oh, you got to do this and do that and do this and do that. And do, you know, and it's just like, you got to do it the way you got to do it. And it pretty much told people where they were in line as far as their input on how you treated yourself.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't necessarily help. It does. Yes. Yeah. There's ideas, but you were doing your research. You found all sorts of ways to treat it. They just, you know, had more ideas, which is great. You know, there's only so many things you can do, but that, you know, you should do this or that person just, you know, breathes fresh air and they were healed. It's like, well, good for them.
It doesn't matter now, but I can't help sometimes wonder, like, had my general practitioner caught it the year or 2 years prior when I was barking about there's something going on with my neck, if we had found something and it was stage one, I believe the natural therapies would have done the trick. You know what I mean? I don't think I would have had to go through it, but it got big enough that I just don't think I could get well, you know, God didn't want me to do that. God wanted me to have the transformation in the way I see things. It reminds me, before we wrap this up, that I remember when I was at the Rolfe Institute, I had a friend, and whenever something really big would happen in life, he'd be like, oh, it's another AFGO. I go, what's an AFGO? He goes, another fucking growth opportunity. So the diagnosis is definitely an AFGO if you embrace it that way and gently. But so you've got, you're running, you're raising money for Jared Sessler, fundraising, and running for state rep again in LD32 right here, which has you very visible. You know, I got the great joy. You were the auctioneer at the Lincoln Day Dinner, which is the big Republican Party fundraiser right here in King County. And we did it out at this beautiful golf resort. And I was really excited to bring Lucas, our 19-year-old, because I told him, look, I really want you to see how your mom handles the front of the room. She's an absolute rock star at fundraising. And I think you're just going to be blown away. You've heard a lot about what she does, but you've never been in the front of, you've never seen her. So he got dressed up and went with me. And he was just floored. He was like, oh my God, I had no idea. He's like, not only does everybody know who she is and praise what she does, everybody knows who you are too. I'm like, yeah, a lot of people know us. And so I just think it was like a take your kid to work day, which we never really did when he was in, you know, junior high or whatever. And so, yeah, it was just, I was really excited because I've been in the front of the room with you, or, you know, I've been in the crowd or assisted you. I've seen you in the front of the room a whole bunch of times at this point, but I was really excited to have him actually be able to see what you do. And I just know he came away with a ton of respect, but so yeah, what do you got? I just wanted to tell that story. And then what do you got going? What are you excited about right now?
Yeah. And then as far as that event, there were so many things that happened. We had a medical emergency and we literally had to have the paramedics came in the other side of the room. And it was such a long, narrow room that some of the people on the other side of the room didn't know. And so, because I wanted...
Right when you were starting, she collapsed out of her chair. It was like...
Oh, it was awful. So, and so I wanted to be respectful of that. And so I had never dealt with it. I should have made more of an announcement like, hey, we're dealing with something over here. We're going to get started a little later, but I mentioned this because there was so many things. And then a huge chunk of the event or the agenda was dropped at one point. And so I was so beyond stressed at that one and running back and forth, trying to like redo the agenda. And so here Lucas is at that one and I had no time to slow down. And I'm like literally trying to piece back, you know, it back together. And that's the kind of thing that people don't see is like when things don't go the way they are supposed to go, like how does the person in front of the room deal with it? And so I was cross-eyed and sweating and I sat down next to Lucas and I just looked at him and I just went I'm trying to figure this out right now. And he just looks at me and he puts his hand on my leg and he's like, he just like breathed. That kid is, he's got something there, you know, and he just was like totally calm. Wasn't asking me questions. He just looked at me and he's like, you know, just was like there with me, you know,
giving you space. Yeah.
Giving me space, you know, so I wish he had gotten to see me in one that it was a little bit more fun for me and everything went well, but I was just dealing with like some other things behind the scenes. And so the poor kid is just like, she's kind of crazy.
I thought you handled it with grace under pressure. And I think he saw all that.
I was sweating a lot at that one. So I'm growing the auctioneering, out in the world, out in the, you know, outside of politics. So that's something that's really, that I'm focusing on right now because you book out about a year. So if anybody needs a great auctioneer, somebody who loves to fundraise, you know, please pass me on to your favorite organization. I'm running for state rep again. That's not my fault. That's God. God's like, I want you to run again. And I'm like, really? He's like, just put your name in the hat. You'll see. So I'm doing that. It's a very different race than it was, you know, 2 years ago. It's a very different environment than it was 4 years ago and 6 years ago. So I'm just bopping along and trying to see where the openings are. It's just different now. The energy's different with things. So doing that, fundraising for Jared Sessler. He is an amazing candidate in CD4. Fingers crossed. We got to get him through the primary. And then, just supporting you and trying trying to, I got to get out camping, man. I got to get out in the woods a little bit to kind of ground out this craziness. But I'm just so happy that things are going well with you, that the treatments are working. Mm-hmm. Your lumps went down almost immediately after the first treatment. So God bless. The prayers are working, and so that's really good. You're doing better. You know, the treatments are a little intense. So yeah, I'm just plugging away.
Yeah, great. Well, Lisa, thanks so much for coming on. It's always so great to talk to you. You know, we have such a natural rapport because we're always talking about stuff. So it's almost like just plug in the microphone and listen in on the Rezacs. But thank you so much. Good luck with all that you're working on, and just so proud of you. And Lucas is proud of you as well. And just thanks again for coming on Basecamp for Men and co-creating this with me today.
Well, yeah. And just you for your... just facing your fears in such an elegant way, such a proud way. And I wouldn't expect you to do it any differently. And, you know, so it's just another one of the examples of your tenacity and, you know, unwavering commitment to yourself and to what that means in your life.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, and I hope that you found the episode valuable if and when you should face a health challenge similar to mine. Now, just because the natural approach didn't work to eliminate my cancer, it doesn't mean it wouldn't work for you. If my general practitioner had caught it a year or two earlier, as we had mentioned, it would have been stage one, and perhaps the natural approach would have worked like a dream, but we'll never know. I think the biggest takeaway is that you have to handle it your way. Different approaches work well for different people, and even though I ended up taking an allopathic approach, I still use all the things I learned in the natural alternative health world to help manage the detox, such as a naturopathic doctor visits, vitamin C and radiation repair, IVs, colonics, healthy food, lots of sunshine and exercise. All the things that worked well for me are there in my hour of need, and they will be for you too. And I am, as strange as it sounds, enormously grateful for the diagnosis. I've learned so much from this, and to be honest, the fear I had was not of dying from cancer, it was long-term health repercussions from doing chemotherapy. That had me scared to death, and that is the transformation that was the most powerful for me. To take a belief I had and turn it into a positive belief. The chemoimmunotherapy drugs were transformed from something I thought would shorten my lifespan and cause untold health issues as I age into a life-extending medicine that my body would partner with to target the rogue cells and leave my good cells to regenerate what my body needs. How do I do this? How did I do this? Well, through visualization, affirmation, I worked one-on-one with a spiritual teacher to put new thought forms in my mind, body, and spirit, and I prayed. Lots of people prayed for me, and what a difference that has made. It may have been the most powerful medicine of all. Groups of people and loved ones making time to connect with God and Christ and mention you specifically. I feel so blessed, moved, and humbled by this. Thank you, everyone, for all your support. I mean that with all my heart, especially the spiritual support that I just mentioned. I couldn't have done it without you.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.